This is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
Hello.
And it is our goal to pontificate.
It's not my goal.
Oh, I think it is.
No, my goal is to hear and react to the things that you say to me.
So, a friend of mine who's an ornithologist apparently just discovered...
Wait, you have a friend who's an ornithologist?
I know.
When did this happen?
I had to get friends that were ornithologists because people insist on calling me an ornithologist, even though I'm not an ornithologist.
Right.
No one seems to know exactly what an ornithologist is.
It's a thing from Dune where it's a helicopter, but it flaps. Oh, wait, no, it's an ornithopter.
Now, there's actually an Onion article. The guy from Zoogener Tours just sent it to me about, like, the top 10 most lucrative jobs.
Uh-huh.
First one being Randy Newman, you.
Sure.
The second one being a criminologist.
Right.
Which was an ornithologist that now studies dead bodies.
Sure.
That was hilarious.
Okay.
But no, an ornithologist is someone, the best definition that I can find, is someone who has a graduate degree in biology, emphasis on birds.
Okay, that's what I assumed it was.
I know. I once told that to someone whose actual job title was scientist, because he was calling me an ornithologist. I'm like, I'm not an ornithologist. And he's like, you know way more about birds than I do. And I was like, I don't know about that, but I said...
You know about birds.
I have a bachelor's degree in theater. That does not make me an ornithologist.
You know a lot about, like, birds and birds' behavior and identifying birds. You don't know necessarily about biology.
I do know some about some of the biology.
You do know some of the biology, but you have not studied biology as a...
No, I haven't. But I haven't done it officially in a university.
Right.
Now, volunteer-wise, I've studied biology left and right.
You've done a lot of science about living bird behavior. You have not done it about... Dead bird, like science, like biology.
You have not
birds.
Been on my bird CSI tour.
You kill birds all the time.
You have not paid attention to those bird body parts in our freezer.
No, I have. Believe me, I've told you to get them out of our house. We still have one in there.
Yeah, I gotta take that.
Thank you very much.
Can I just tell you,
when you go to work tomorrow, can you take that with you?
Yeah,
please?
I actually need. I owe a guy something.
Christ. Sounds like a fucking bird mafia show.
No, it's
don't ask me about the birds in our freezer, Kay.
I told you, you knew what you were getting into with this marriage.
No, I actually didn't.
I
didn't think I was going to be picking turkey feathers up out of our house.
So this week, speaking of turkey feathers, I really feel like I'm living the dream. I mean, I've just really, career-wise, I just really feel like things have just lined up for old Sharon Steitler.
Have to let this go at this point. Continue, please.
But, I work for the National Park Service, and the visitor center for our particular park is in the Science Museum of Minnesota, which is, on the one hand, kind of vexing because oftentimes people think we're parking security because we have a badge.
Oh, sure.
But, on the other hand, I have access to all kinds of science from the Science Museum, and one of them is Dick Olenschlager, who's in charge of all the bird body parts downstairs.
Right.
And so every now and then when I see him walking through the hallway, and if you've ever seen my program Today's Office, I talk about Ole when he helped me identify some parts in an owl pellet that you found. And if that sounds intriguing to you, you should book me for your bird festival and have
me
do Today's
Office. If that sounds
intriguing
to you, seek help immediately.
Yeah. But anyway, he just, you know, it's like if I find some dead birds that I can't use, I give them to him because he has the permits for them. And if he has some bird parts I can use since I now have permits, you know, for programs and stuff. So the other day, I'm just standing there and chatting with some of my other coworkers, and it's the end of the day at the Science Museum, and he's walking by, and he's like, hey, I got some duck parts for you downstairs. You gonna come down and get them? I was like, oh, you do? And I was like, I'll come get them next Tuesday. So I forgot, and so I go in on Tuesday, and at the visitor center, the back counter, are all these duck skulls, and then like a couple of mallard heads. Just
sure.
The heads.
I saw the picture, yeah.
They were stuffed, and I was just so happy, and the person working there was like, yeah, the guy downstairs dropped these off. And I was like, I'm winning at life. This is kind of the life I wanted to have as a kid. I traveled to get to see birds. I birdwatch for a living. And scientists hand me bird parts to keep.
Now, my side of this story is there was one point where you found a dead turkey.
This year. I think we talked about that, yeah.
This year that you decided to bring all the feathers home.
You're lucky that that's the part I decided to bring home. There were parts I thought, no, I can't.
And it was
home. Here
for a couple of weeks. At one point, I had to gather up all the feathers and put them in a plastic bag and hang them in the closet. And I was still finding turkey feathers all over the house for like another couple of weeks.
It was in a backpack. Some of the feathers got loose in my backpack.
No, I had to physically put these in like a little takeaway bag. I know
the feathers
bag.
Got everywhere. Blame the coyote that killed the turkey.
No, I'm going to blame you for bringing them to the coyote did not kill the bird and then bring it into the house.
I had a kick-ass program with those turkey parts. Those kids had a blast.
Fantastic. Hooray for those kids.
Anyway, yeah, if you ever come to my park, you know, ask about the CSI bird program. I will take you on a trail of terror and we will solve who killed what birds.
All right, so speaking of which, are we going to deal with the mail we got since our last podcast?
The nice mail or the not so nice
no,
mail?
No, you know the letter I'm talking about.
I wasn't going to read that one. If you want me
no,
to,
I can read. I demand you read that one because I agree with it.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to just read the parts that pertain to you or to the whole? Whatever.
No, read whatever. You read this letter. You read this letter to me.
I didn't read all of it. I just read part of it.
Yeah. No, read whatever parts you want to read.
Okay, anyway, I get the sense this person is frustrated because there are not a lot of birding podcasts out there.
I can't imagine why not. It's
and there
a
should be.
Topic.
We should not be one of the main games in town. And I would encourage anyone...
I think that speaks to the pathetic nature of science education in America that we are one of the primary birding podcasts
and
in
it's,
town.
And, it's, and I'm not saying we're the only birding podcast. You can listen to Laura Erickson's podcast. Sure. The UK has some podcasts. Every now and then, Bill Thompson, when he has time, does his This Birding Life podcast. But there's... It's not the plethora... There are more bad movie podcasts out there than there are birding podcasts.
Yeah.
And as much as I would like to be the end-all, be-all birding podcast, I just can't. As a matter of fact, I have been working on a well-produced, hiring voice actor birding podcast.
Right.
Something that I just want to try out to see how it works. It's a lot of damn work.
It is a lot of damn work.
And it's like, there's no money up front to do that. And it's like, I just want to try these out to see how they go.
Let me put it this way. If you are a young person, this is not something for old people to do. If you are a young person who is interested in doing a podcast, birding podcast, you should do it.
Please. If you are someone who listens to this podcast and you think, these people never talk about anything birding-wise.
Use your iPhone. Use your internal computer microphone.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the quality right away. Get, you know, figure out what your format is first and then get a microphone.
Yeah.
And just do it. Podcasting is not that hard.
Please, because I would like another birding podcast.
I think if nothing else, this podcast is proof that that podcasting is not that hard.
No, it's not. But anyway, so I get the feeling that the rare times when I get angry emails, it's usually because somebody wants a specific type of podcast and we just can't do that. And if you tell me things specifically about the podcast you don't like, it's just going to make us do it more. So if you don't like it...
It's not going to make me do it more.
I think the favorite part of this email... Well, actually, it was like, you know, you plugged yourself as a speaker or keynote for birding festivals. You should hope that no one scheduling speakers listens to Podcast 193 to characterize Bay City as having been chosen as a location because it has such a high ratio of bars to citizens was wretched. That was the organizers who told me that.
That's a great reason to choose
a
conference site.
Like, they announced that at the, you know, at the first keynote luncheon.
Sure.
They had a bar crawl scheduled for this birding symposium. I was like, that wasn't me just pulling stuff out of my butt. That was actually a selling point
for
the symposium.
This particular festival was not chosen, you know, because it was a hotspot birding site like you do with, like, Biggest Week in American Birding or the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival or Space Ghost. It's because they're there to present things.
Nobody goes to the Midwest Birding Symposium for birds.
Right.
You go to meet other birders and speakers and have a good time.
It's like the Minnesota paper session they have up here. It's not, there are no birding festivals because it's in December.
Yeah.
It's, you go there to hear the scientific, you know.
Yeah.
You pick it, but it's not in the middle of nowhere. It's in a central location with lots of parking.
Yeah, and I mean, Michigan has tons of great places to go. And you can go birding in Saginaw Bay, but the two trips I was on hardly had any people on them, not because I was on those trips, but it was just, they were there to do other things, not necessarily to go birding.
Except for, I mean, I understand, like, birding, like, if you're going to a birding festival to go bird watching, that's the thing, but, like, otherwise, 99% of conventions I've been to have been chosen because they are urban areas where they have a nightlife that you can do shit after the festival.
Yeah.
But continue.
But anyway, that's not
the part I agree with.
But this is the and lastly, Not everyone loves NBB.
Good.
Your podcast would be so much better if he did not spend so much time pontificating from a position of ignorance.
I agree. I agree completely. I am forced almost at gunpoint to do this podcast.
Yeah, you are. And so, I'm sorry, if you don't like NBB, please don't listen to the podcast anymore, because he's not going away.
You know what we should do? We should just release a version of this podcast where it's just you. Where, like, they cut out all the bits of me, and it's just you talking.
Actually, we'll replace you with a bobbling.
I think that would be fantastic. I think you should be you and our cockatiel.
No! I know exactly what we should replace you with.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to redo the intro.
Okay.
Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, and I am the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill. Now let me tell you this great bird story, Bill.
I don't see how that's any different.
God. I would be so turned on if you were a willow ptarmigan. That's the state bird of Alaska, folks. Ooh, that is the majestic willow ptarmigan doing his call. So anyway, person who emailed us, I'm sorry that the podcast upsets you. You may not want to listen anymore.
Right.
Or start your own. Or find someone else who's young. Well, that's assuming you're not young already. I don't know. Yeah. But either start your own podcast, find someone that you really like, ask them to make the podcast you want.
I'm sorry you don't like... I agree with your position 110%.
Yeah, you really have no business being... So, but anyway, part of what made me think of this was... So this ornithologist friend of mine, she was like asking a question about... erotic aerobic TV shows, because I guess we talked about
Wait,
that.
Wait, what? I missed this complaint.
That was when you were in London. Oh, we talked God. About this. But and then she's trying to explain the podcast to her husband, and he's like, so what does this guy do? And I was like, oh, he does things like he directs Klingon Christmas carols. And he's like, no, on the podcast, what does he do? And essentially, you go bow, 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 bow.
That's, yeah, that's more or less it.
Okay, anyway, so on to birding stuff. So... one of the big birding scandals this week. It was a pretty big birding scandal.
As if there's a scandal every week.
Well, sometimes I maybe make things up into more of a scandal than they are. Sure. But there was apparently a postcard that went out in New York for window cleaning service. Yep. And they used the artwork of Miranda Brandon, which we've talked about on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. And maybe you've seen her in, I don't know, the National Audubon Society magazine? Mm-hmm. And what she does is she used to be one of the people who would go out around buildings in the spring and fall and see if there were any birds that had hit the windows
right.
in downtown Minneapolis and St. Paul. And some of the birds, before she would turn them over to Audubon or the University of Minnesota, she would take back to her studio and she filmed them as if it was the exact instant they were hitting sure. the window. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful and heartbreaking stuff.
Sure.
Well, somebody's PR team for a window cleaning company...
found it on the internet.
Stole the artwork.
Yeah.
Put it on a postcard and yeah. sent it to a neighborhood. And the caption is, birds hate us.
Because the windows are so clean.
Yeah, they hit it. And so, and then
what
says,
a terrible idea from on several levels.
Yeah, yeah. And then it has the phone number of the company. Yeah. And the name of the company, it says, window cleaning and pressure washing. And it's yeah. just, not only did
what
you just...
terrible idea.
Partially, I blame Windex. Because sure. they've had the commercial for years of, like, the right. hooded crows flying into windows. And, oh, it's so funny. They keep flying into the window. Yeah. And, I mean, I watch that and I'm like, that's really terrible because it's not funny that birds fly into windows.
Right.
So this...
but it's presented in a funny way that
the birds are clearly still
anthropomorphic
alive.
Anthropomorphic birds can't tell this. This, however, is just... yeah.
It's... yeah, and it's a warbler species. And so this started making the rounds on Facebook. Mm. Well, and as the internet rage machine is wont to do, people started finding the name of the company, window cleaning. The name of the... and I'm purposely leaving the name of the company out, and I will explain at the end why I'm doing that. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of companies that have this name.
Sure.
And so... people started leaving comments on any window cleaning company that had that name. So those companies
sure,
like,
of course they did.
I don't know what you're talking about. Mm. And then they finally found the exact one because the phone number matched what was on the card. And even I kind of left a bad review there, you know, the one-star review. So I think that's kind of a tasteless postcard. Then I looked at the Facebook page and I was like, this Facebook page hasn't been updated in over a year. So we can rage all over it all we want. You know, it's not going to do anything. Well, then people started calling the number. Ugh, which, God. But I mean, mean, really, what else are you going to do in that situation when a company... I mean, I found this ad really offensive. No, and I found it offensive. Let me tell you the two reasons I found it offensive. Number one, the bird sitting window thing is not funny. But number two, this is a young artist.
Right.
And they stole her work without compensation. Yeah, I agree. That really pissed me off.
No, it's the whole thing about, like, as The Simpsons said, there's no justice like angry mob justice. Where...
Well, what else could they have done?
I don't know. I don't like mobs. That's my personal thing.
But I mean, if you're angry and you see something, you feel like the artist had been done wrong.
You know, and if it had been correctly directed, but, you know, all these other companies who had no it was a dumb idea.
Well, something interesting happened. The owner of the company contacted New York Audubon.
Sure.
It was like, we don't know what the hell happened. We're getting all these angry phone calls. And they directed them to National Audubon. And I hesitated posting an end to the story because I never saw anything official. And so, all I saw was somebody had copied and pasted an email message or text message. The owner of the company contacted Audubon and essentially said, we fucked up. We did not know. Number one, this was an experimental postcard that went out to see how people would react to it. Number two, had no idea that the image had been stolen.
Sure.
Number three, had no idea what a big issue this was about birds hitting windows, which I find fascinating that a window cleaning company doesn't have that. So the owner has, you know, apologized.
Where is this company located?
New York. Okay. But it's fascinating to me. I never saw any kind of official press release go out. And I'm like, wow, I wonder if that guy's still receiving phone calls. Because I know I saw it on several Facebook pages, and I shared it.
Oh, I'm sure this is something that's going to be coming up 5 years from now. That, you know, somebody's going to discover this in 2 years. I can't believe!
But it's like, I would really like to add to the Facebook post that I have about it, like the official apology, but I can't find it anywhere. All I can find is like, oh, such and such got this email, and I'm copying, posting it from such and such's wall. But... from what I understand, the owner of the company is very sorry and feels bad about it.
Have you contacted New York Audubon?
No. I don't have a contact for them. All I saw was copying and pasting from someone claiming to be from New York Audubon.
Okay. So you were willing to, like, post a negative review on their Facebook page but not look up the contact information for New York Audubon?
I didn't post it on New York Audubon's page.
Okay.
Yeah, did you not listen to what I said? I said I initially posted a bad
review. Sure, but I'm saying...
I saw that the company hadn't done anything for over a year on their Facebook page, so I deleted my review. My review wasn't up that long.
How hard is it to contact New York Audubon?
It's not as easy as you think. Why don't you contact New York Audubon? Are you too busy pontificating?
I'm not pontificating at all.
I'm just saying.
I'm here dragging down the birding world, as established in our previous email.
I'm just saying that if you're a company and you want to eliminate some people, maybe put up something official that we could all see.
Well, that's asking they're not a birding company. Sorry, I was about to make a comment about how birding companies don't know how to use the internet or even how to issue a press release.
Tell me about morons.
That.
Yeah.
Join the rest of us join the 20th century birding companies.
Hey.
Learn how to issue a press release for your new product.
Hey, the federal government still lets you fax in your resume for
that. That would be fantastic if I could get a fax.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when I used to have to write about new product and stuff for a certain magazine. It was like, what's new out there? Then I would go to trade shows like, why didn't you write about our new thing? I was like,
you didn't issue a press release.
Did you issue a press release? Yeah. Did you? Or they would issue it, but they would never send it.
The thing that galls me about birding companies not issuing press releases is I used to write for a technology website that is now defunct. I am still getting so many emails, like a dozen a day, about new products, and they're not even the products I was writing about. Mm-hmm. Somehow I got on a list for like a fiber optic company that is telling me about new deals they've established in Kazakhstan, and, you know, to like, oh, we're part of this trade alliance. I was like, why am I getting, and like, birding companies have not figured out what a press release is for.
I know.
It's insane.
Well, and then it gets weird, like, if the company, let's say, has a home office in Europe versus here in the U.S., and the European sensibility can be very different than the American sensibility. And so sometimes they'll ask me, it's like, well, why did you write about it this way? And I was like, well, that's because you did X, Y, and Z. It's like, oh, that would never go over in this European country. It's like, yeah, well, that's what you're going to have to do.
I just want them to publish the information.
I would just like them to let people know. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
All right, let's move on to the next story.
I completely sympathize with you about the press release. Let's see it. Oh, I don't know if I want to talk about Etsy. Okay. So, a flycatcher has shown up in the UK.
Oh, my heavens.
Could be a first UK record, but...
You're showing me these pictures as if I haven't seen this a million times before.
I'm going to post... This is what happens in the UK when a flycatcher shows up. Yep. But no, as someone else pointed out, it's like, it's almost like there's an invisible fence that they're afraid to go past. Because UK birders, when a mob gets together like that to see, or I'm sorry, a big twitch happens to the all go see an Acadian flycatcher, they, you know, they're all going to keep each other in check and try and give the flycatcher its space.
Sure.
So... When I first heard about this going around, that there was a flycatcher, I was like, oh, that just really sucks. And at first they said Acadian flycatcher. And so somehow in my brain, I got that mixed up with Trails flycatcher. And Trails flycatcher is actually willow and alder flycatcher, which are super hard to separate. But really, once you get into the whole Impidnex flycatchers, it's just, they all look the same.
I'm going to assume you're saying words now. Continue.
But anyway, I linked to it on my personal page, and I was like, oh, Trails flycatchers, why does that have to be a Trails? And Jeff Gordon, the president of the ABA, not the race car driver, was like, it's not a Trails. And Greg Neese from the ABA was like, yeah, it's an Acadian, it's not a Trails. And I was like, I hate flycatchers so much. And then... I just realized, like, I have a block with flycatchers, Impidnex flycatchers. And the best part is, when I try to type in Impidnex flycatcher, autocorrect changes it to emptied flycatcher. It's like, that is my soul. That is my soul right there. But one of the even better parts, though, about this whole miracle of the flycatcher that has shown up, it's a photograph taken by Mark Thomas, and it's a guy... who was watching this Acadian flycatcher, which can be hard to identify, but, you know, most American birders are saying, hey, it's an Acadian flycatcher, and we can tell because of the beak and XYZ. But just to seal the deal, this guy went out, this British hero went out and collected a poo sample from the flycatcher to get DNA analysis.
Oh, sure. That sounds completely that's biology.
Ah, but it just, it's like, that's how the British roll, man. Number one, thousands of people come out for this first bird reported.
Oh, doing actual science instead of just arguing about it on the internet?
Hey.
What an amazing breakthrough. Way to smash on through, British bird watchers.
Well, an argument, I shouldn't say an argument, but people started talking about who was the first person to do this. And Greg Neese was like, I'm taking a great deal of pleasure being the first person on Facebook and possibly the entirety of the inner tubes to call it an Acadian. And then he went on to talk about a hummingbird that showed up and that they got DNA analysis, I think, from a feather. And Ken Kaufman's like, well, actually, Britain had its first alder flycatcher in 2008. The DNA from a dropped feather was one of the things they tried to use to confirm the ID. And Ohio's first dusky flycatcher a few years ago was confirmed partly by DNA from a pulled feather. Just... this is what it's come to with flycatchers. This is why I don't like flycatchers.
I don't care. Like, all the things that you've said, this is... I don't...
I have a block about flycatchers. I will say that I'm impressed with my birding ability, is that I can look at something and know when it's not a flycatcher.
Right.
Because a friend of mine who's not a birder posted a picture to my wall. It's like, hey, Sharon, what's this? And I'm just like, oh, God. Number one, depending... I don't even... let's just assume it was in this country. I'm not 100% sure. It kind of looks like a flycatcher, but it doesn't. And then I was like, you know, I can't even begin with a bird this brown unless I know, you know, time of year and where it was taken. He's like, Bozeman, just a few weeks ago.
You're saying words to me that I assume are actual things.
Yeah.
But no, hats off to that guy to actually collecting evidence. Hey, he's doing actual science. He's collecting evidence.
Anyway, I just want to go on to say that the guy from Montana who posted the picture, when he said it was Bozeman, I just used the Sibley Smart Search to confirm my suspicion. It was not a flycatcher. It was a light-faced female western tanager.
Right.
But I was just impressed with myself. I was like, gosh, there are a lot of reasons why I would think that's a flycatcher, but I know that's not a flycatcher. So I know enough with Impidnex flycatchers to know when something is not a flycatcher, which I personally feel like is a triumph of the human spirit.
You know those scenes where Charlie Brown is turning in his homework?
Wah, wah, wah. Go peanutize yourself. All right, Mr. Brown, go peanutize yourself. And people who know what I'm talking about are chuckling and saying, I already did. And people who don't know what I'm talking about is like, why is she talking about penises? I'm not talking about penises. I'm talking about peanutizing yourself. And if you don't know what peanutizing yourself is, you're not on Facebook.
Oh, my Lord. All right. What else do you have?
Boobies behaving badly.
I've been going through my Google search history again.
I thought you were using Chrome, so you could go in incognito mode.
Oh, you can do that. You can do privacy mode in Safari, too.
Don't
you
worry. Isn't it owned by the same company?
What the hell are you even talking about?
Isn't Chrome and Firefox the same?
No! And I said Safari, first of all, and which is Apple, and Chrome is owned by Google, and Firefox is owned by the Mozilla Foundation. What are you even talking about?
I don't know. I'm on CyberDuck.
CyberDuck is an FTP program, you lunatic.
Wasn't there a browser that had a duck in the title for a while?
No.
Oh.
There absolutely was not. There never ever was. There was Internet Explorer, and then there was first there was Netscape Navigator. Before that, there was Mosaic.
Oh, yeah.
And there's CyberDuck is an FTP program. If you're thinking of DuckDuckGo, that's a search engine.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
That's a search engine, you lunatic. Oh, my God.
Hey, I at least know all the things we were talking about were browsers.
Gee, Merry Christmas.
Tell me more about your flycatcher-type browsers, Bill.
Oh, God.
Which browser has the most emarginated primaries?
So I'm going to walk away from the podcast now.
Which one has partially braided retroceses? Tell me about your browser with the retroceses.
How is it possible that you have figured out how to use my PS3 to watch Netflix, but you cannot figure out how to use my Apple TV to watch Netflix when it's like a billion times easier?
How many universal remotes are we going to have in this house?
We don't have any. We have 3 remotes in this house. And somehow you have figured out how to use the PS3, which has a dozen buttons on it to watch Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot figure out the Apple TV, which has 6
Because I used
buttons.
All my brain space trying to figure out how to use the PS3 remote, for crying out loud. Oh. You want me to learn a new... It's bad enough that I have to go through a PC system at work and deal with Macs at home.
What's our next story?
I'm pretty sure we're talking about you.
Please.
Because, okay, so it's an article about boobies.
Okay.
And it just has one of the best paragraphs ever written in bird history outside of Nelchi Blanchan.
Yep.
First, you have to understand that boobies are dicks. Seriously, they are profoundly selfish douchebags.
Well, they're animals.
So. Mated pairs cheat on each other every chance they get.
They're animals.
It's so bad that if you remove a male from his nest around the time the female is laying, when he comes back, he'll destroy all the eggs because he assumes his girl has been stepping out on him in the meantime.
They're animals.
And she probably has! Booby couples stay together for about a year and a half, and the females are constantly auditioning next year's mate.
Sure.
But the worst are the booby babies.
I used to collect those in the 90s.
If you are the firstborn chick, your only job is making your sibling's life miserable.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds kind of like you and Pat.
Kind of, although Pat was the middle child, so.
But still, she was older. If you make too much noise, peck them in the head. If they get too close to you, peck them in the head. If they look at your food wrong, peck them in the head. If you're bored, peck them in the head.
Mm-hmm.
About 20% of younger blue-footed booby siblings die because of their elders' attention.
Mm.
But they are the lucky ones, since the nearby brown boobies, seriously people, stop snickering, this is serious, kill their younger siblings every time! It's all part of the dark side of birds.
Where is this article from?
This article is from Last Word on Nothing. Science says the first word on everything and the last word is nothing. Victor Hugo. This was not written by Victor Hugo. This was written by Eric Vance.
Really? Because I heard Victor Hugo was coming back to do a new book tour for his...
I heard he was going to do a musical about
Les Mis, the Twilight Chronicle. That's fine. I don't have a problem with a scientific article being written for a general audience.
An audience.
And, you know, that's how you get people into wildlife studies is anthropomorphizing. Here's how birds are like people. Here are how birds are not like people. And obviously saying boobies is funny. It's something that I
think, though, with some birds, funny. Like, people think of blue-footed boobies, and they think, oh, this is a kind of weird-looking bird, and it's got the bright so blue crazy. Feet, and it kind of flaps back and forth, yeah. and it looks all weird, and it's like, yeah, it's kind of an asshole.
Yeah. Well, no, they're animals.
Pretty much all animals are. I mean, I've said this before, there are no nice again.
Animals.
Every bird has a dark side. Yeah. I mean, even chickadees.
Yeah.
Chickadees, I can't think of it right now, but I'm sure... Well, actually, I remember reading an article that accused them of forced
mate. Oh, did I tell you the story when I was driving to the movies the other day? Mm-mm. I was driving to the movies the other day, and I was taking this sort of winding, you know, back route by a lake. And there was a group of Canada geese standing by the side of the road.
Oh, God, it's so hot and that you said Canada geese and not Canadian geese. I am so hot right now. And
there was one that was sort of looking like it was trying to go out on the road. So I was not in a hurry, so I stopped the car. Mm-hmm. Was waiting there. I actually put on my hazard light in case anybody came up behind me. Nobody did.
I am so turned on and right now.
The one of the geese like came out into the road. Mm-hmm. Was joined by two others tentatively. Mm-hmm. They got halfway into my lane.
Tell me more.
Stopped. Just started looking around. The rest of the group on the curb just wasn't particularly interested in doing anything. They were just standing there like a bunch of assholes for a while. Turned off my hazard light. Drove slowly around them, and went about my business. They were just. Being dicks. They just wanted to stand in the street.
It's not as hot as I thought it was going to be. No.
Because it was like, oh, they went across the road. But no, they didn't want to cross the road. And why would they? They were on the side where the lake was. Mm. But no, birds are, you know, they're animals. And it's, you know, it's funny and relatable to relate them to humans, but you really can't, you know.
Yeah. I think about that sometimes, like, you know, especially watching Birds of Prey. Sure. Like, today, I had to do a wellness fair for a company. And I was on... Very high. I was on a floor so high in a skyscraper.
You were on a skyscraper.
That when I got out of the elevator, my ears popped.
Sure.
Wow, I didn't realize that high up. But when they set me up in the room where I was going to have a booth, it was all surrounded by windows, and I'm looking out the window, and I'm like, we're eye level with peregrine falcons. Mm-hmm. And so we're digiscoping the peregrines and having a great time, and then all of a sudden the peregrines grab something, and everyone's like, oh, it's got a pigeon, and I was like, I think I see spots. I think it's a flicker. And then it ripped off the wing, and the wing was yellow. I was like, yeah, that's a flicker. But it was like, oh, that poor flicker. That poor flicker's been migrating. You know, he's just like, do-de-do-de-do, I'm going from
Canada. No, it's a food source for this bird.
Like, yeah, just ripped. And here we're all just watching it kind of for edutainment.
That's nature. The one bird that the peregrine is a predator, it is going to eat this bird.
Yeah, that's all it's going
to
do.
And because this happened, the peregrine may live to reproduce, and the flicker will not. No. Meanwhile, the other flickers who have avoided the peregrine will reproduce. And that was one of the great things.
Explain the circle of life to me some more, Mr.
No. Steiner. I mean, I was actually going to make a Star Trek reference here, because I remember they were, I think it was, I'm almost positive it was Star Trek The Next Generation, and somebody was talking to Data and saying, you know, it's like evolution, only the strong survive. And Data said, well, actually, the rule would be more accurately stated as, only those best able to adapt will reproduce, because nobody survives. And maybe this flicker, you know, was old and had, like, you know, had a bunch of children that will get...
It's far,
you know,
more likely that it was the young of the year.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm just saying, you know, this is how it works. Now this peregrine gets to survive another mm-hmm. day because it's got this energy. So, all right, what else we got?
So, Noah Stryker. Writer.
Stryker. Stryker. Stryker.
I barely know her.
Yes.
So it's weird because, like, I remember Noah being this young kid who would write for Wild Bird Magazine.
Sure.
It's been fun to watch this kid that would write for Wild Bird Magazine go off, do mm-hmm. all his studies, you know, had a book come out last year, got some really great reviews.
Good.
So this year he decided to do some kind of world record big year to try and see as many bird species worldwide as he possibly could. Well, that's
kind of what a big year is, isn't it?
No, a big year is to see as many species as you can in a country or your state or something like that. So this guy was like, I'm going to try and do it. And he made it as of September 16th. He met the goal.
Fantastic.
He got his 4,342nd. He's seen over 4,300 birds.
In a year?
just by mid-September.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. And I mean, a lot of it is, you know, technology has mm-hmm. advanced things. Flying has advanced things. It's still an exhausting feat because, okay, on the one hand, I'm not into the whole listing thing, but I'm into the whole travel thing and just kind of seeing the conditions that he's going through and whatnot. It's like, wow, I like sleeping a lot more than you do, my friend.
Well, fantastic for him. Good.
But yeah, but it's kind of exciting because...
What was the old record?
It would have been 4,341.
Well, no, I mean, sometimes you burst those records, but anyway, continue.
But, well, he's going to burst that record, but he has already broken the record with a frog mouth. At 4,342. Don't laugh.
I will laugh.
All right. but no, he has the rest of the year and a few more countries to go, so he...
So I could catch up to him is what you're saying.
No, there's no way you could catch up
to him. Oh, well, there we go. I'm going to do it now.
You don't have the money.
See, the nice thing about it is you don't actually have to verify these things, so I think I'm
going
to do okay.
I think it's going to be kind of verifiable with Noah because he's been going out with a lot of bird guides.
Sure.
Who are seeing these birds with him. So it's not like he can just say...
That would just hold me back. I mean,
I saw that flycatcher. It was both a trail and it was an Acadian at the same time. That is not what Noah sounds like. Actually...
Let's not do impressions here, please.
No, it's not remotely what Noah sounds like. He's a very nice person. But I like people I know and just making them voices and talking like them. I got a frog mouth.
This is really great coming across the microphone here. So, great. Well, congratulations.
But he might get 5,000 species worldwide before the end of the year, which is exciting. It's exhausting for me to think about that. That is not how I like to enjoy birds. So, I mean, I know a lot of people have been like posting blow-by-blow accounts of what he's been doing. And if you're interested in listing, I highly recommend you go check it out. He's a very good writer. It's just... If I saw something like a frog mouth, I wouldn't just want to, like, see it and then move on to the next species. I would want to, like, hug it and pet it and love it and call it George.
Well, who's to say that he's not doing
You can't
that?
Do that kind of stuff. No, if you are doing a big year, you look at that shit and then you move on. You cannot... It is all one-night stand birding. You cannot go to breakfast the next morning. You have to chew your arm off and get to the next bird. Right. Yes, I compared listing to one-night stands. Yeah. Sue me.
All right, what other stories do you have for us?
Oh, I was going to talk about all the funny illegal stuff that's on Etsy right now.
Okay.
Now, a friend of mine, Susan, was talking about finding someone who was selling some hawk and owl feathers on Etsy. You cannot sell native bird feathers on Etsy, even if they shed. So this, of course, led me to like, wow, I wonder what other stuff's on Etsy. I found someone who claims to have found shed feathers of a red-tailed hawk, and with the amount of feathers, this has to be a dead red-tailed hawk, which I'm sure they found a dead red tail. But they made it in this weird tree thing. So if you want a tree with a bunch of illegal feathers for $80, it's on Etsy right now.
You probably shouldn't tell people to do that, because you're a park ranger.
I'm not an enforcement ranger.
Sure.
But maybe with this podcast being out there, you know, I was looking at all the illegal stuff on Etsy, and I was like, I wonder if U.S. Fish and Wildlife has, like, one person... And their job is to patrol eBay and Etsy for hawk and eagle.
I like to think that you know, they're actually trying to bring down, like, big poaching operations. And then, you know, if somebody complains enough, this is like they give this to somebody as a, you know, a shit detail that they have to do to, like, go and
But you tell this Trouble person on this Etsy person, to not sell their dead hawk feathers.
Yeah, that it's illegal. Meanwhile, you know, they're trying to stop eagle smuggling and, you know, all this other stuff that's happening across the borders.
Well, gosh, now you're just making me feel bad.
That's my job. That's what I do on this podcast. I speak from a position of ignorance to make you feel terrible.
You know what? I speak from ignorance all the time. I got shamed by a couple of Cooper's hawks the other day. Totally.
Okay.
Well, so I have my patch. I have this patch that I like to go birding in because it is within walking distance of our house. As a matter of fact, I had someone say to me, who lives not too far from us, someone that I met today, said, yeah, I see that you're birding over at this place all the time. And it's like, why aren't you over at this place? It's a much better place. You know, you're reporting here. It's like... Because it's in walking distance from my house. Yeah. So I have, like, a little bit of time. I'm just going to walk this place for about an hour rather than, you know, drive somewhere. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But I was just like, yeah, you're right. That other place is a good spot. But maybe the spot near me will eventually be a great... I think it's a good spot. But anyway.
Right.
But some people... I ran into some people because I'm like, there are birders in this park. I'm usually the only birder in this park. And I got closer. I was like, oh, I recognize you from Birds and Beers. And I'm like, yeah, we saw your reports here. We want to come birding here today. There are no birds here today. So anyway, we're kind of walking and we're chatting. And these two excipitors move through. And I was like, oh, well, those are sharpshins because you're not going to see Coopers, you know, that close together this time of year. And also they kind of had a mushroomy shape and blah, 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 blah. Then they turned around and landed again.
Just to mock you.
Just to be dicks. And they landed. And I mean, even without putting binoculars on them, they landed. Not only did they land, they were backlit. And as soon as they landed and they were backlit, they had the flattest heads ever. And I said, oh my God, you guys, those are Cooper's hawks. Those are not sharpshin hawks. And then I like look in the scope and they have the really thin lines in it. And I said, yeah, everything I just told you about why those were sharpshins. And they were really nice because they were like, well, maybe these are two other excipitors that flew in. I'm like, this has got to be the same two that we just saw like 5 seconds ago.
Well, this gets back to what I was talking about before. I mean, observation, like for birds, is extremely useful. And it's, you know, that's the primary thing. But this guy, the guy who went and collected the poop, that is hard physical evidence, which is a level of, so kudos to him for doing
it. Kudos. Puberty. Sorry, anyway.
Why are you even, okay, we're done with this podcast.
No, I just want to say that I think there are a lot of birders out there who never like to admit that they misidentify birds.
Oh, sure.
We all do.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to say it. Hi, I'm Sharon Steitler. I misidentify birds sometimes. It's going to are you saying I misidentify birds all the time?
No.
You just said sometimes and then you chuckled. You're trying to shame me like a Cooper's hawk would shame me.
Yeah. I am a Cooper's hawk. Zip, pull apart my skin. I've been a Cooper's hawk this entire
time.
That's
why I'm so attracted to you because I love excipitors. Actually, if anything, you would go keck, keck, keck.
Can't even let me have that, can you? All right, I think I'm done. I think I've had enough.
I think this podcast is done. Hey, if there's a government shutdown next week, we'll do another one.
Maybe. All right, this is Bird Chick Podcast number 194. If you have any questions for Sharon, you can find her on Twitter where she is at Bird Chick. You can email her. She is Sharon at
birdchick.com.
You can phone her anytime, day or night.
You do not give out the phone number. You know what? If it's a number I don't recognize, I don't answer my phone. It goes to voicemail anyway.
Sure. All right. So we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.